Y'all ready? You're listening to The Lost Startup. Three friends finally back to, what's the tagline? What's our line? I threw myself off talking and adding extra shit in there. We're going to breathe new life into past culture, sorely missed and long since departed. And we sorely missed you. And I know that you sorely missed us. Because how long's it been?
6 weeks, maybe, since we recorded.
Oh, that's kind of a big big gap. But I am still Jason.
I'm Luke.
And I'm Matt. And that proves that we do not have a recording that we play at the top of each episode. It is live. And Jason apparently had it memorized and forgot it. But that's okay.
Well, like I said, if I'm flowing with the original and I'm sticking to our intro, that's no problem. But I was throwing in extra shit and got lost. So it's just been a while.
The best part about this, though, is that I'm just going to cut and splice one where he actually did it right the first time and leave what Matt said in there so it doesn't make any damn sense.
Love it. So here's the deal.
Guys. Oh, cool. Yeah,
I was going to say, Jason, I'm behind, but I did listen to the first two episodes of your other podcast, or I watched the videos on the YouTubes, Powerbomb Nation.
Yeah, the Culture Cast.
Yeah, you guys...
I didn't know that had come out yet.
Yeah.
We got like, what, three or four in the can?
I watched the Ghostbusters Villains one, and I watched the Serial one. So I still got some catching up to do, but I was entertained, so thank you for providing entertainment to me.
Thank you for listening, and yeah, Dwight and I are we kind of fell off after Christmas and New Year's and the holidays and everything, and we're about to pick it back up. So yeah,
nice.
Thanks.
Well, this episode here, we're going to be talking about songs of 1980, which because of our age and because of the time in which we grew up, we, you know, set an arbitrary date cutoff when we started doing the podcast. And this is the earliest episode. We're not going to go before 1980. So we will eventually do a movies of 1980 episode. This is the other 1980. We're not going to do video games or TV shows in 1980, I don't believe. So this will be before me and Luke were born. Jason was just a wee little baby back in 1980.
I was, yes. My birth year. And music, two great things. So,
yeah, and it.
I'm excited.
Yeah, that's it. Powerbomb Nation.
That's the right one, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Now,
sorry, I was trying to download those.
Nice.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So here's the deal too about 1980. We're starting to look, and Luke can speak more to this as well. But I was born in 1982, so this was 2 years before I was born. But it might as well have been 50 years before I was born. Because it's weird how things, like in your head, like, okay, I was born in 1982, so 1969 was 13 years before I was born. So the same distance between when I was born in 1969 is when I was born in 1995. And I don't know, I can't wrap my mind around it, but it's like if I wasn't alive, it's the history and it all happened at the same time. The Beatles and 1980 are the same to me because they were before I was born.
Well, now you're just making me feel extremely old.
Yeah. I bet
is what you're doing. So I'm gonna have to. I'm gonna school these boys tonight. I gotta teach them about things they don't know anything about.
I kind of agree because there were a lot of albums that came out by bands that I know and like a lot of their apparently later stuff. And I mean, I'm looking at these albums, going, really? I've never heard of any of these songs.
A lot of these are very early works of people I really, really dig. So, yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, I'm going to hit you guys with some Matt stats throughout the episode. Yep, exactly. It was a bad year for deaths. Let's just say that. But, yeah. So, I guess without any further ado.
I can think of one really bad one, actually.
I can, too.
Shared the death date with old Dimebag Daryl from Pantera, who died on the same day 24 years later. But we'll get into that. Luke, so why don't you tell us your number five song that was the least underwhelming from 1980? Because I don't think you really have any favorites, do you?
I do. My number one is a hardcore number one. It might even make, you know, all-time top songs list at some point if we ever do one of those.
Okay.
But Let's start with number five. Speaking of early works from artists we generally like, if the music, maybe not the man. But I'm going with Rock With You by Michael Jackson.
Okay. Yeah, it's off the walls. Great album.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, as Jason just said, it's on the, it is from the Off the Wall album, which was apparently Michael Jackson's fifth solo album, which that actually kind of surprised me because I always thought of Off the Wall as his first solo album.
I didn't know that, actually. I considered that his first solo. Everything before that was Jackson 5, right? Like, so.
He apparently had four albums before this where he was solo, but it was still in the style of Jackson 5 and being produced by the same people. But this is the first one where he got to explore any creative freedom at all. But not necessarily on this song. I think Don't Stop Till You Get Enough is the first song that he actually had a hand in making. But this song was written by Rod Temple2n and Quincy Jones. And it was actually first offered to Karen Carpenter for her first solo album, but she turned it down.
I can't see Karen Carpenter doing that song.
I was thinking the same thing. I just want to see her wailing behind the drums and singing.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't see that.
Got nothing. So technically this song was released in November of 1979, but I had to add it simply because I can't really listen to it without at least bouncing some shoulders.
Yeah, shoulders always get to bouncing.
It always kind of makes me start moving.
I'm glad you said that, Luke, because I don't have any Michael Jackson on my list, and Jenny would kill me probably for not. And I was like, oh my God, did Off the Wall? I was like, I don't think that came out in 1980, but it was November 79. So by the time the single
I think
hit,
Off the Wall did come out in 80, but they released this as a single first. That doesn't make any sense. No. I have no idea.
No, the album came out in August of 79. The single came out in November of 79. But I think it was hit in early 80.
Yeah, I was wondering the same because that album, something off that album probably would have made my list.
Yeah, but I will say that we'll give it to you, Luke, because it would have been a huge hit all throughout 1980, even if it was released a couple of weeks before.
The other reason I had to add it was because it knocked off a song that I had to add on here because I didn't have another one, and it's one that I literally turn off when it comes on the radio. So, I don't have to talk about that.
You gonna tell us what that song is?
I think it was some AC/DC song.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. When I listen, nothing against the AC/DC, but I flip them off as well when they come on. I'm like, nah, you know what? Like,
wow, me too.
And I can't remember whichever song it was. I was like, I pick this one because it sounds the least like the other ones.
Which is hard to do with them because they all
They all sound the same.
They all sound the same.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm glad.
Hey, but
hear
you know
that.
What? They also have like 12 platinum album, so they're doing something right.
And I can't you can't hate the players in that game.
Yeah, that's right. Back in Black may have been the album that came out this year, and that's like top five best-selling album of all time by any artist. So I find it weird that all three of us are like, yeah, if I never heard AC/DC again, I'd be all right. But I feel the same.
Yeah.
All right.
I do want one more thing about Rock With You is well, two more things. I kind of think of this song as the last great disco song. I can't think of another one that came out after this that's even listenable. I am no expert. That is for sure.
Disco bled over until like 83, really. 84. I mean, it really kind of went into 84, too. I mean, I'm not.
There's
a lot of disco.
That's my question.
Yeah, I don't know. There was a lot of influences that bled over, but that's maybe another episode.
And then, of course, this music video is just a single stationary camera with a full body shot of Michael Jackson dancing and singing under a spotlight in a suit made out of a disco ball in front of a green laser show.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got to mention the green lasers.
Yeah. And occasionally, Michael's head will appear in the corner, like it's one of those singing the song next to his body, dancing, kind of like the old 80s family portraits where the old head would be hovering over.
It's a great video, though. It'd be really easy to replicate in today's day and age, and would be kind of funny to do, to recreate that video. You know, the one piece that's missing is, like, if it were me who was doing it, the dancing would not.
The actual talent. Well, Jenny. Jenny could do
it. Jenny could do it, yeah. I could do the backgrounds and she could do the dancing. I'll have to suggest that to her.
Except we should have, like, four people just with green flashlights.
Yeah.
Just moving them around.
We could do it.
Man, I think you got your next project lined up right there.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
All right, Luke, any other Michael Jackson tidbits?
That's all I can pull out off the wall.
Oh, that's good.
Now you did say that. Don't Stop Till You Get Enough was like one of the first that he had a hand in.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, I went back and forth on these two, but
yeah. Well, I had the special edition CD of Off the Wall,
mm-hmm.
and there are a bunch of like demo takes that are on there. And it's literally Michael and, like, his siblings. Like, little Janet is in the background. You can hear her talking and, like, helping them out. But, like, it's them recording themselves, I guess, on, like, a little tape recorder, fleshing out what will be the basis of Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. And it's really cool to hear. Yeah.
That is cool.
Matt, I'm sure Jenny probably has this.
Oh, too, yeah.
So,
I'd say so. I'm sure I've probably even heard it, but
you probably have. Remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my number five song is a song that I first heard in the early 90s. So, again, at the time was probably 12 years old, but to me was 100 years old. And I heard it when my dad's band was playing a lot of shows. They practiced in our basement, and there was a student
teacher. Everyday People,
yeah. Which we've actually played their version of Hip Hop Hooray on the show on one of our very early episodes. But at the time, I had a music teacher named Mr. Green who had gone to Kentucky State University, and he was and still is one of my all-time favorite teachers. He passed away a couple of years ago, but he was brand new. It was his first year teaching, and his best friend or one of his best friends was a student teacher who's a year below him. And his name was Mr. Brown. And somehow or another, Mr. Brown ended up playing keyboard in Everyday People. And I thought it was so cool to have the music teacher in my dad's band, you know? And he was really into...
Hey, Matt, I think the whole band thought it was cool that Mr. Brown was in the band. He was just a cool dude.
He was a cool dude. And he brought a bunch of songs that he liked to play. And one of them was this song, which I heard... And none of my friends knew the song until a few years later when Will Smith redid it. And then a couple years after that when Dr. Evil sang it to Mini-Me. And it is Just the Two of Us by Grover Washington Jr. and Bill Withers. And it's just a smooth song.
Hey, Matt, I have an answer pretty early on about whether there's any crossover.
Okay.
This song is on my list.
All right, there you go. So, there's nothing much to say. Bill Withers, I think Grover Washington Jr. wrote the song, and I just recently learned that when researching it. But Bill Withers is the version that we all know and love. And he's got this smooth voice, and it's just a great love song.
Grover Washington plays the piano.
Oh, okay. There you go.
And Bill Withers sings.
Yeah. So I have this strong attachment to it because it went back to when Dad's band was playing in our basement and I'd hear this song every week. And then, of course, hearing it in pop culture in Austin Powers and Will Smith doing it with his son. And I just always liked the song. But I don't really have anything else to add other than that.
I just have down that the lyrics of this song are beautiful. I see the crystal raindrops fall and the beauty of it all when the sun comes shining through. And then the next line, it makes those rainbows in my mind and I want to spend some time with you. It's a beautiful song, and Bill Withers' voice is so sincere that you believe him. I just love Bill Withers' voice. Use Me is another good one. But anyway, I did see online that this song is actually has a strange tuning. It's tuned to where A equals 444 hertz, and standard tuning is A equals 440 hertz. I don't know what kind of a difference 4 hertz would make, but apparently it at least makes the song stand out.
So it's kind of like Kiss from a Rose, where it's like tuned up to with a capo on the 3rd fret and then a quarter step higher than that. So like you have to retune your whole guitar to play that one song.
Exactly. But it makes it stand out.
Well, I will tell you, I just recently bought a new subwoofer for my home theater, and there were two different versions, and one version could go down to 20 hertz, and the other one could go down to 17 hertz, and the difference was about $1,000, and I thought, $1,000 for 3 hertz? I think maybe I'll just get the one that goes to 20 hertz, and you know what? It probably can't tell the difference.
Okay, well, I was going to say, are hertz... Because at lower, they'd be longer, so are they harder to overcome than when they're higher numbers? I don't know.
Yeah, the lower the hertz, the less...
The longer the sound wave, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't even think humans can perceive much lower than that. So, like, it's more you feel it more than you hear it, but 3 hertz is not... It isn't worth it.
Well, I'm pretty sure we got a couple of 100 sound engineers listening, so they'll probably write in and tell us all about it.
Yeah, I'd say so. But yeah, Jason, what Bill Withers song is on your list?
Well, it's not, but I will tell you my number 5.
Okay.
And you might be surprised to know that this artist is as high up as they are, but it is a song by Prince. It was an album that was released on October 8th of 1980 from the album Dirty Mind. And I like the whole album, but I had to pick a song right off the album, so... Because I have to include Prince if he's popping up in any year that we're covering. The song is called Party Up. And there's not a lot to say about the song. It's just a feel-good post-disco funk song about partying, right? So that's it. But it's early Prince, you know. It's
That's what I was going to ask. What is this, like, his first album? Because it's titled Prince, isn't it? Self-titled.
No, his first album is called For You.
Okay.
This album is called Dirty Mind.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because I definitely checked it out, and I didn't recognize anything.
No, you wouldn't. Okay. The only song that you might recognize on the album is When You Were Mine, and maybe the only reason that you might know that song is because Cyndi Lauper covered it and kind of made it popular later on in the 80s. Well, actually, I think she did it on her She's So Unusual album in like 84 or 85. But yeah, so it was written by Prince and Morris Day of Morris Day and the Time. So if you know anything about Prince, him and Morris Day were like just tight and played rivals, of course, in the 1984 Purple Rain movie. But yeah, like I said, this is early Prince. Dirty Mind album really was notable for opening the door for more like sexually explicit music that was going to come from the decade. So the album itself like featured topics about incest, oral sex, ejaculation, etc., as you would expect from Prince.
Prince sure does have a dirty mind.
He sure does. yeah, so he recorded this on his in his home on like a 16-track recorder that Warner Brothers agreed to pay for, and it was the first time that he used his backing band on a recording. So like his previous albums, whatever he'd done, he'd usually played every instrument himself on the recordings. But and his band wouldn't even call the Revolution yet. That didn't come until like 83 or 84. But just a cool, funky, post-disco, but kind of in the disco vein. Because like I said, disco was still going on in 80, 81, 82. Like it kind of bled over.
So you said there's sexual content on this album?
Yeah, I know that's crazy that you wouldn't think that Prince would do anything sexual.
Have you looked at the album cover? He's wearing
the album cover
shirt
itself.
With a bandana and Speedos with his pubes sticking out the top of it. So.
Yes. Yes. There you go.
Okay, yeah.
That tells you everything you need to know about the album is the cover right there. You can judge a book by the cover here. And man, I tell you, I was in Gatlinburg in like 2010, 2011, and I stopped at this CD shop or this record music shop, you know, and was digging through. And I was like, I need to see if they have any Prince albums that I don't have. And they had the Dirty Mind CD, so I didn't have that yet. So I picked it up and bought it and was like, yeah, like, all right. It's another one added to the collection. So it's good. It's not one that I'll pop in often and listen to, but
good to have
not
it in
my
the
favorite
collection.
Of the Prince era. Yeah, but I mean, definitely a fun album, and Party Up is a fun little funky joint. So,
all right. Well, before you do your number 4, Luke, I want to do Matt's stats, and I'll do bands formed and bands disbanded, which I always have fun making these lists because, like, there's two parts to them. There's the part where, like, oh, wow, that's the year that band formed. And then there's a, I can't believe there's a band with that name. So,
right.
Bands that formed in 1980, Bad Religion, Depeche Mode, Eurythmics, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Gold City, which I will stop. You all probably don't know Gold City, but I got to tell a quick story. It's a gospel quartet that when I was selling mattresses, this woman I worked with, I had to go to Louisville with her for like a training, and she had this Gold City album, and she played this song called I'm Not Giving Up, and there is this guy that sings the lowest bass note I have ever heard, like to where it's comical, and I'm like, I need to borrow this CD, and she let me borrow it, and I listened to it way more than anybody should listen to it, but it is classic.
I remember that.
It would have been on my list had that song came out in 1980, because I absolutely love it. Anyway.
Hey, wait. I think you need to use your new subwoofer to listen to that song again.
That's a good idea. I might actually do that. Blow the windows out of the basement. It sounds like like a frog croaking. Like, it's so low. I have to send it to you, Jason. It's great.
Yeah, I'd like to hear.
Other bands. Man of War, which is known for being the loudest live band ever. I don't know if that's still true. Meat Puppets. And then dozens of gay and lesbian choruses across the country. Like, I was looking at the list, and it's like the Gay Man's Choir of San Francisco. But there were like a dozen different cities. So I didn't look up to see what happened, but there was some like revolution in 1980, and all these gay and lesbian choruses were popping up everywhere. REM, Suicidal Tendencies, and Violent Femmes. So those are the bands that are of note. But these are the bands that I'm like, oh yeah, I like these names. Bitch. Dicks. Bundle of Hiss. Flux of Pink Indians. Haircut 100. The Hooters.
I know Haircut 100, actually.
Do you? Yeah. Okay. Do you know Kissing the Pink? Because they formed in 1980.
No, I don't know that one.
Love Tractor, Naked Ray Gun, and Pig Bag.
Pig Bag?
Yeah. And then bands that disbanded, Eagles, Led Zeppelin, Uriah Heep, and the Captain Matchbox Whoopee Band.
Yeah, but the Eagles, that was like, they
that was a big
one. What's Uriah Heep song? Is that the Green Eyed Lady? What is that?
I watched something recently, and they mentioned Uriah Heep, but not in a musical context. I don't know. But
are you talking about Green Eyed Lady, Ocean Lady?
Yeah, I think
I can't remember. That's it's not Uriah Heep. Any other day, I would have been able to tell you this band's name.
I'm looking now to see who the.
I was gonna look it up, but I don't know how to spell Uriah Heep.
You don't
like it. I can promise you that's not them.
Lady in Black, Come Back to Me, The Wizard. I don't know any of these songs.
Sugarloaf. Sugarloaf is the name of the band that did Green Eyed Lady.
Oh, okay.
It just popped in.
No, that's fine. I don't recognize any of these songs, but I definitely know the band named Uriah Heep. So, for whatever it's worth.
Okay.
But anyway, so.
Well, I did see Bitch open for Dicks in 1992, so.
Oh, was that the show that they played with the Hooters and Kiss the Pink?
I think so. Yeah.
Love Tractor and Pig Bag were across the street.
Pig Bag was there. I remember seeing Pig Bag.
Yeah.
So, do you have any more?
No, that's it. So,
okay.
I hope your number four song is by Flux of Pink Indians. Is it?
It is not. It's actually by Grover Washington and Junior and Bill Withers.
Oh, okay.
So my number four is Just the Two of Us.
Okay. Let me write that down and then we'll go on. All right. So my number four song I first heard in the early 90s when my dad's band, Everyday People, was playing songs in the basement. And
guys,
whatever
I think
reason,
like a weird loop or something here.
I know. It's funny how this was a time when I was heavily influenced by the music of my parents. So song here was, I thought they did a really good version of it, and it was one of the most upbeat and fun songs that they played, and it peaked at number 9 on the Billboard Top 100, and the artist no longer plays it live as a protest to all of the mass shootings across the country, and the song is Hit Me With Your Best Shot by Pat Benatar.
Nice.
Okay. And I don't think the song is about shooting, but she says fire away in the chorus, and so she's just saying, I'm not going to play that song anymore.
Which
is my biggest hit,
if you,
arguably.
No one has ever associated that song, I promise you, with school shootings. Never.
Well, she's one, great, it came out
she's
before.
She's a great artist. Yeah. I love Pat's music, but yeah, that's ridiculous. That's.
I always thought she was talking about like a pickup line or like, show me what you got. Like,
exactly. Like, I'm ready for whatever you're about to throw at me. Let's try to do this relationship and let's see what you got. Like, come on.
I guess it could be read.
I'm not here to waste time. Give me your best.
Yeah, like hit me with your best shot, as in literally hit me. Also, Hit Me Baby One More Time by Britney Spears. Is it a remake of this song? I don't know.
Oh, that's a good question.
Mm. Yeah.
The rabbit hole deepens.
Yeah. No, I don't have anything else to add. It just, when they would, Dad's band would play this song, and I'd always like go down to the basement and hear them do it. I thought they did a really good version, and it was just, I don't know. You guys have played music. There are just certain songs that, like, when you play together with a group, it's like you never feel like you capture the energy of the original artist. And there are other songs that, for whatever reason, you're just, like, in the groove on. And this one, they were in the groove on.
In the pocket.
Yeah, I think the singer, Kelly, had a lot to do with that, because she could really had a powerful voice when she was firing away. So that really helps.
She did.
I'll tell you another song by Pat that came out around this time. It was a single, I think, but I don't think it was like massive, but you need to check out a song called We Live for Love.
Okay.
I think it's like my favorite Pat Benatar song ever.
So what you got, Jason?
All right, my number four. The album was released February 4th, 1980. The single that I'm about to mention hit number 48 in the U.S. Billboard Hot 100. And number four on the UK singles charts. It is off the album of the self-titled album of his name, Peter Gabriel. And the song is Games Without Frontiers. Now, I remember really getting into Peter Gabriel in like the early, well, I don't know. It was probably around like, it was like the early 2000s.
Hey, man, I've climbed up Salisbury Hill. I get it.
There you go. All right. Did you shake the tree?
You know I did. With a sledgehammer.
Oh, exactly. Perfect. I was trying to think of something else to add, but I couldn't. Sorry.
I think those are the only two I know, actually. That's pretty good. It was a Genesis.
Okay, perfect.
At the Genesis of my life.
It was the Genesis in your eyes. okay, so.
Oh, in your eyes. Yeah,
See what I did there. Now, I had downloaded it's sort of a greatest hits album by Peter Gabriel up to the point of whatever the album was released, called Shaking the Tree. And I was listening to it in the car, and I came across a song that I had never heard of before called Games Without Frontiers. And I was like, holy shit, this song sounds so badass. So first of all, I want to mention that there are backup vocals by, who is now popular again and good for her, Kate Bush, right, for Running Up That Hill from Stranger Things. But Kate also appeared on the chorus of a song called Don't Give Up, which was on Peter's, 85, 86 album called So, which had In Your Eyes on it and Red Rain and all these songs. But anyway, yeah, him and Kate were tight. The song is just so awesome, like Games Without Frontiers. It basically, the lyrical content was like he was commenting on war and international diplomacy and how all these dictators were like being childlike, like all this was being a children's game played on a playground. And it was his first top 10 hit in the UK, and basically the song title Games Without Frontiers, and it was inspired by a European TV show called Je Sans Frontier, which is what Kate is singing in the background of the song. So she's like, Je Sans Frontier. And so everybody's always, I've seen online, people are like, she's saying she's so popular. She's so popular. I'm like, that's not what she's saying at all. It's Je Sans Frontier. But anyway, So the TV show Je Sans Frontier was, It consisted of two teams that would compete in these like crazy games of like skill, and they were dressed in these bizarre costumes, and it was just weird. There was a British version of the show called It's a Knockout, and at the end of each verse in the song, Peter goes, "It's a knockout." So all this is inspired from this, but
he needs to do a remake where he adds the American version in another part of the song where he goes, "Guts, do you have them?"
See, Guts, do you have them? Exactly, because that's what this sounds like, right? The show, I thought of Guts. So The song has this really like sonic, electronic, sort of dark, foreboding tone to it. And it's a cool song, but my favorite part of the song is at the end when he's in the last chorus. The song just completely changes and it goes into this really awesome, like, electronic percussion beat with Kate Bush's vocals just like ringing out and fading out underneath it. And it's just so badass. It's such a cool song. I don't really have any more to say about it other than like when I heard it, I was like, ooh. And that really compelled me to go and check out more Peter Gabriel stuff. And I like so much of his music. And I can't say I like everything he's done, but like really, really into Peter Gabriel. I like him a lot. And yeah, man, Games Without Frontiers. Jeux sans frontières.
Well, Jason, I'm going to be checking that out because I do like Kate Bush's voice.
So, oh, yeah.
Peter Gabriel always does interesting melodic choices. And
yes.
He never goes where you think. So I'll check it out.
He's kind of an oddball, you know, when it comes to his music. Like, you don't know what to expect from Peter. And very artsy almost, you know, I guess. And I've always said that, like, you know, of course, he was the front man for Genesis in their very early days. And then Phil Collins took over when Peter left. And I think that was, like, the best move both of them could have made. Like, I like Peter's solo work so much more than I like early Genesis, and I like Phil Collins better as the vocalist for Genesis, so it just worked out. But yeah, that's my number four.
Luke, do you remember our neighbor Sonny growing up was a huge Peter Gabriel fan?
He loved Peter Gabriel and he loved Queen.
Yep.
And Matchbox 20, but that's a different story.
Well, that hadn't been later. They weren't around.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just, every time I hear Peter Gabriel, I think of Sonny. I much prefer Genesis with Phil Collins. I never got into the Peter Gabriel stuff. And I loved the video for Sledgehammer, but the song I just thought was okay. And I've never really listened to much else. So I'll have to check this song out.
Oh, I could give you a bunch of Peter Gabriel stuff to check out, man. Yeah, I mean, very, very cool.
Awesome. Well, before Luke, you hop into your number three, I'll hit y'all with another version of Matt's stats. And this time.
That's the updated
version. Yeah, it's the 2023 version. I hit y'all with the births and deaths of 1980. So, kicking it off January 16th, Lin-Manuel Miranda, who big fan of. I know Luke is as well. Mr. Hamilton.
I'm disappointed
himself.
That he's that young because. What have I done?
Oh, that means he wrote Hamilton when he was younger than you, just FYI.
Yes, I know. Yeah. Exactly.
Just one day later, January 17th, Zooey Deschanel was born on the
20th. What a babe. I was just talking about how hot she was today at work.
Well, there you go.
Who's that girl?
Yeah. She's the new girl.
It's Jess.
Yeah. Then on the 28th of January, Nick Carter from Backstreet Boys.
Don't act like you don't know. Nick Carter
wasn't his brother was in the Backstreet Boys.
No, Aaron. No,
Aaron
Nick
just
Carter
died.
Was the Backstreet
Boy. Aaron sorry. R.I.P. Yeah. Aaron. That's,
but yeah, I honestly, like, I know Brian Littrell's in Backstreet Boys. I know Justin Timberlake is in NSYNC, and then the rest of them, I have to really think which guy is in which group.
You don't know about Kevin and Howie and
Kevin's
AJ?
In Backstreet Boys because he's from Kentucky. I do know that.
I just named all the Backstreet Boys, my friend.
Oh well, there you go. All right.
Yeah.
May 21st, Gautier was born, who was, of course, a one-hit wonder, you know, about 15 years ago.
Somebody that I used to know.
Yeah.
I used to know that guy.
Which, you know what? I still like that song. I know it got played out.
No, it's a little jam, yeah.
Yeah. June 26th, Jason Schwartzman. I'm only including him because he was the drummer for Phantom Planet, not just the actor from Scott Pilgrim and all the Wes Anderson movies. Jessica Simpson.
And Hackers?
Oh, yeah, maybe. He was in Hackers, yeah. Jessica Simpson on July the 10th. Kristen Bell on July 18th.
Sure. All right.
Michelle Williams from Destiny's Child, not the one who dated Heath Ledger, was born July 23rd. Vanessa Carlton on August the 16th. T.I. on September 25th. On September 29th, Dallas Green was born. I don't think either of you guys know him, but I'm going to give a shout out to Jimmy, who I know listens to these.
When was T.I. born?
September 25th. You're older than T.I.
I'm older than T.I.?
You are, by about a month.
Wow.
Yeah. So Dallas Green is a singer-songwriter guy who has the most silky smooth voice you'll ever hear. And he is a band called City and Color. And the band is called that because his name is Dallas Green, City and Color.
Very clever.
Ashanti was born on October 13th and Christina Aguilera on December 18th. And then a few deaths of note, January 29th, just about 13 days after Lin-Manuel Miranda was born, Jimmy Durante died at age 86, Mr. Frosty the Snowman himself. January 30th at age 61, Professor Longhair died. I don't know who he is. I just liked his name was Professor Longhair. He was a piano player. Huh. February 19th, Bon Scott from AC/DC died. He was 33. September 25th, at age 32, John Bonham from Led Zeppelin died. And, of course, go ahead.
I was going to say, that explains why that album is one of the best-selling albums of all time, because it's his last album, isn't it?
Who, Bon Scott?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, actually, you know what? It might have been the first one with the new guy. I didn't check. Brian Johnson is the new guy.
Which, actually, that does make sense, because it's Back in Black. Okay. Never mind.
There you go. And then December 8th at age 40, John Lennon died. So literally lost AC/DC, Led Zeppelin, and the Beatles in 1980. So whether or not we like AC/DC, we understand their cultural significance and into the history of rock music. So
You know, to be perfectly honest, you can't say that we lost AC/DC because they're still around and Brian Johnson has been with the band longer than Bon Scott was. So
I think he just meant we lost someone from AC/DC.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, when you think when Bon Scott died, they were probably like, well, we're never going to be able to find another guy who can sing like that. And they found one.
They did really quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, sorry. Go ahead, Luke, with your number three.
All right. Well, my number three song was written by a man named John Deacon. Yes, that's right. The same John Deacon from the Weird Al movie, otherwise known as the bassist from Queen.
Okay, I got you.
Another one bites the dust.
Okay.
I learned... go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, John Deacon recorded almost every single instrument, including the hand claps. Only the drum loop and the guitar solo were played by other band members. Huh. So, and I'm listening to that song and I'm going, what other instruments are in there than it's just the bass line, right?
Well, there's like some funk guitar at the end.
Yeah, I think Brian May actually, he did that. So I don't know why it says he played all the instruments when all he did was play the bass and hand clap.
Right. I watched on YouTube, I can't remember the girl's name, but there's a little girl. She's like maybe 10 and she plays bass and she's really good. And she played her favorite bass grooves of all time. And one of them, of course, was Another One Bites the Dust. But then either right before or after that, she played, oh my gosh, what's the 9-minute rap song, the first rap song, Rapper's Delight.
Yeah,
which was inspired by Good Times by the disco group Chic. And in that video, they had a little pop-up facts, and it says, John Deacon spent some time in the studio with Chic and was inspired from their song Good Time to come up with a bass groove for another one. Right? I said another one, Rides the Bus, because I hear the Weird Al.
That's the Weird Al version.
Yeah. So it's funny that those three songs, like there's the disco classic Good Times, then there's the rap, the historical rap song, and then the, you know,
Queen. Wait a minute. So if I'm, because I'm just now putting this together. Are you telling me that the band Chic, Good Times, right?
Mm-hmm.
That bass line almost is identical to, that's the Rapper's Delight bass. Yeah.
It is. And then this was inspired by that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. One of the members of Chic called John Deacon out on it. He said, man, you owe us that song because you only got that from hanging out with us.
Hey, let me tell you,
he wasn't saying he stole it from him. He was just like, you got inspired by it. So
yeah, Chic is a badass band, y'all. Nile Rodgers, amazing guitarist. Like, they had some heat.
I believe it.
So Another One Bites the Dust was nominated for Best Rock Performance by a Duo or Group with a Vocal at the Grammys, which I find that a very awkward category. It also won the American Music Award for Favorite Pop Rock Single of 1981. But I had to choose this because it's a during COVID, I decided I was going to be a drummer. And this was one of the songs that was like my warm-up song, getting ready to drum. And then I never really learned how to play anything else.
Nice.
That's okay. That's a good place to start. If you want, I can come down and play the guitar part on this one for you. I don't think I'll need too much work.
Yeah, you just have to wait till like the outro.
No, I need you to play the bass part. Come and learn the bass part.
I could do that, probably.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I have this weird relationship with Queen where it's like I really got into them when I was, I guess, 10 or 11, 12. I don't know. Maybe early teens. And then you just start getting sick of their songs, the ones that keep throwing in your face on like your radio stations that play. And we live in an area where classic rock is dominant on radio.
I suggest you always go back to Bicycle. That's one you'll never hear on.
It's fine. That's fine. I like Fat Bottom Girls a lot.
Yeah.
But Radio Gaga is my favorite Queen song. That'll never get old to me. But yeah, but like another one, Bites the Dust. It's such a good groove. But yeah, I've like it's worn on me.
If we're going favorite Queen song, I'm gonna have to go Queen Killer.
Killer Queen.
You mean Killer Queen?
Nope.
They had a Queen that. Killer as well.
No. It's okay. Killer Queen. Fine. Whatever.
Okay. See, that's one that I'm burnt out on. But yeah.
Oh.
But no, teach their own. I mean, I'm glad that you still appreciate it. I just they just wear them out, man. But yeah, no, you cannot deny the groove to Another One Bites the Dust.
Yeah, it's an awesome song. It's got a great beat.
Yeah,
you know. And Matt, I thought it was funny that you brought up Sonny right before this because I hadn't thought about it for years. But Sonny's probably the one who introduced me to this song. If it wasn't Weird Al, it was probably Weird Al.
It was Weird Al for me for sure. sure.
Sonny definitely was the one who showed me We Are the Champions and We Will Rock You and whatever that album was on.
Jenny and I went to see Queen in concert back in, I want to say, 2018.
With Adam Lambert?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was when Adam was. Yeah.
Yeah, he was. And you know what? We're big Adam Lambert fans. We watched him back in American Idol. And in the finale, he performed with Queen. And I was like, oh my God, he could replace Freddie Mercury. I mean, yes, I know no one can replace Freddie Mercury. But as far as hitting the notes, like the dude got it. And then sure enough, he didn't replace, but you know, because it's Queen with Adam Lambert. It's, you know, he's not a member of the band.
Now, did he record an album with them or did he just tour with them?
I think he just tours with them. But they did a whole like section where like they did a, you know, they had the screens with Freddie Mercury performing with them. And like it was really well done. But I mean, even in their 70s, I mean, really, it's Brian May and oh my God, what's the drummer's name? Roger Taylor.
It's Roger Taylor. And what's funny is Duran Duran's drummer is named Roger Taylor.
Interesting.
So I'm always like getting them. I'm like, wait, that's crazy.
It's the same.
But yeah. There are three Taylors in Duran Duran, and none of them are related at all.
That's funny. Wow. Yeah. All right, Luke, you got any other Queen tidbits?
No, I'm getting off of this bus. I'm biting the dust. Whatever.
He's hopping off the bicycle. He's getting his fat bottom off the bicycle.
My absolute.
Unless we want to mention that in the 70s, a astrophysicist by the name of Brian May postulated that fat bottom girls make the world go round and has yet to be proven wrong.
Oh, yeah. I totally am in agreement with that theory.
Yeah.
And you know Brian May's got that Weird Al hair, too.
He does.
Yeah. I don't know. I know Jason hadn't seen it, but look, I think my favorite line in the Weird Al movie is when Jack Black as Wolfman Jack at the end of that whole pool scene, he just looks at John Deacon and he goes, "Come on, guy from Queen." Yeah. That's my favorite line of that whole movie.
Come on, guy from Queen.
So my number three song is a debut single by this person as a solo artist, but he was already a household name at this point. And somehow I didn't even hear this song until I was in college. I don't know how. It was one of the first songs I learned on guitar. Not the whole thing. I just learned just the intro. And it's an instantly recognizable guitar riff. It went 4 times platinum. And shortly after it was released, the guitar player was killed in a plane crash. And of course, I'm talking Crazy Train by Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh, yes. And they're one of those in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah. But it's like instantly recognizable guitar riff. And I didn't know this, but it's funny how like you start reading about these songs. So Randy Rhoads was in the band Quiet Riot. Greg Leon replaced him at Quiet Riot when Randy Rhoads left to play with Ozzy. And Greg Leon said, "Hey, Randy, have you ever heard that, or have you heard that Steve Miller song, Swingtown?" And he goes, "No." And he plays the guitar riff. And the guitar riff for Swingtown is a slowed down version of the main riff from Crazy Train. So Ozzy, Randy sped it up and was like, "Oh, yeah, this sounds heavy metal." So it's funny that Steve Miller Band influenced Crazy Train.
So, well, that's the same kind of thing as the disco inspiring Queen.
Yeah.
Well, kinda.
It is. So yeah, you missed the whole story, but essentially Steve Miller Band's Swingtown is the same guitar riff as Crazy Train, Ozzy Osbourne, and that's where Randy Rhoads got the idea, was listening to
Swingtown. I can hear that. Okay, wow. Yeah.
My question to you, Matt, is I saw Black Sabbath also had an album come out this year. Was that still with Ozzy, or did they get another singer?
Dio.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Holy diver.
Yeah.
Apparently I've been down too long in the Midnight Sea.
Man, this the dad joke album.
He's rolling on me, right? Like, we're yeah.
I'm feeling punny. I don't know.
Yeah, it says 1979-82, Dio joins the Heaven and Hell era.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I think Black Sabbath has had a few different right? Like, a few different lead vocalists.
You know, I don't know.
I could be wrong. No?
I'm looking at Black Sabbath on Wikipedia. It said 1968 they were known as the Polka Tulk Blues Band.
Well, I'm glad they changed their name.
Yeah. I just remember Dad always saying that when he heard Black Sabbath for the first time, he thought they were aliens. He said he'd never heard anything that sounded like that before. And it's so weird because, you know, growing up in the 80s and 90s, when you hear it, you heard the hundreds of bands they influenced. So when you hear Black Sabbath, it just... It's like, yeah, that's heavy metal music, but
yeah,
they were the first. Can you imagine?
You know, I was surprised, I guess, to learn. I don't know why, but I've been watching interviews with like Billy Corgan of Smashing Pumpkins lately, and that Tony Iommi of Black Sabbath is like his main influence.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to imitate his sound so bad. He's tried everything he can to imitate that sound. No, Black Sabbath's cool, man, for sure.
Yeah.
I think it always kind of works out that way, because Kurt Cobain wanted more than anything to be a punk rocker, and he was anything but.
Right.
So, go figure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, isn't that the saying? They say, when you're trying to find your voice as an artist, whether it be like physical art or a musician, try to emulate your favorite artist, and the difference between what you sound like and what they sound like is your signature sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's your style.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah, I mean...
So, yeah, I don't have anything else to add. That whole album is really good. I chose Crazy Train just because it was one of the first guitar riffs I learned on the guitar. So I have that nostalgic attachment to it. But I'm kind of like Jason at this point. Like, it's played out so much that, like, I don't get excited when it comes on the radio anymore just because I've heard it 7,000 times. But the guitar playing, Randy Rhoads, was something special, and I wish that he would have lived long enough to write some more classic guitar riffs, because he wrote quite a few in just the few years that he was around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, Jeff.
For sure.
What you got for...
Okay. Well, so my number three, the album was released September 15th of 1980, and I don't have any charting information for the song. I know that it was a single, but I don't know what the chart position was. Like, Wikipedia told me nothing. I don't know. But it is from the album Nothing Matters and What If It Did. It is Ain't Even Done With the Night by John Mellencamp, or John Cougar Mellencamp, or John Cougar, or John Mellencamp, whichever you prefer to call him. And I'm not sure what he was going by at this point, but I think it was just John Mellencamp. So
if he's not playing with Michelle, I don't even acknowledge him. Okay, that's not true. I just wanted to make a reference.
Okay.
Wild Night. Okay.
Yeah.
Great cover. I heard that song as I got in the car yesterday on the way home from work. John Mellencamp's version of Wild Nights came on, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to turn this up. This feels great. But, so John Mellencamp's another one of those guys that has those songs that, like, I am so tired of hearing, right? Like,
Pink Houses.
Pink Houses.
Jason, what is this song called?
Ain't Even Done With the Night.
Okay.
Now, you know, song like Jack and Diane, Little Diddy about Jack and Diane. You know, how many f-ing times have you heard that and been like, God, I'm so sick of it, right? Like, but he's also got some really great stuff, and this is one of them. So I've always said that John Mellencamp reminds me of where I grew up in Stamping Ground. Little rural, small town vibe through everything that he does. He's got that. I mean, that's what he's about. And this song really does it for me. So it has this slower tempo and vibe to it. But at the same time, it's a very feel-good tone. And I feel like the song might, it like may or may not harken back to like the 50s and 60s a little bit. So are you guys familiar with the song or?
No.
I just hear small town when I hear John Mellencamp and I laugh at how many times he says small town.
Oh yeah, exactly. So sure. I'm tired of that one too. You know what I mean? But like, yeah. So you haven't heard, well, it's all right. Hold tight. Yeah. Well, it's time to go home.
Is that this song?
I ain't even done with the night. Yeah.
I think I've heard that, yeah.
So, from what I gather, and from what I imagine, like, when I hear it, it's about he and this girl who maybe just started seeing each other, and they're out in their small town at maybe, like, a pool hall or something on a Friday night, and they're, and I don't know, you know, they're having a bite to eat or just a little small town like Stamping Ground where I grew up. And maybe he's not really sure how to handle the fact that she's digging him. He's not really sure what to do or where to go with the relationship next. But there is a line in the chorus that says, it's the last line of the chorus is, well, it's time to go home and I ain't even done with the night. So it really puts me in that, like I can just envision myself being him in Stamping Ground at some pool hall. And, like, I don't know, dropping his girl off at her house and saying, hey, like, it's time to go home, but you know what? Like, let's make something special this night. Let's go in there and get it on, I think is what he's trying to get at. But it's just a good song. It makes me feel good every time I hear it. And
so you like both implicit and explicit versions? Because
John
Mellencamp's very implicit, and Prince is, well, he just says it.
Yeah, I mean, you can be blatant and outright just filthy, and I'm like, yeah. Or, like, I see what you're getting at here. I know what you're implying, John Cougar Mellencamp, and I know that you're trying to have sexual relations with this woman after you guys sink that eight ball. And so, no, it's just a good song. It's but it does have a very – and I think the reason it reminds me of, like, the 50s or 60s is because I saw a live performance of him doing it on some show. And if I recall, you can't even see the band. It's almost like he might have been just playing it over like an instrumental of the track. But he's doing these little like dance moves. And I'm like, damn, I wish I could move like John Mellencamp is right now, because that's kind of like heat. And it's just got this very, like I said, 50s or 60s thing going to it. But it is a good song. And it, like I said, it does make me feel, just it just puts me at ease and makes me feel really good when I hear it. I'm like, oh, I will never turn this song off. So kudos, John Mellencamp, for not burning me out on everything that you do. Go suck on a chili dog all you want, because I'm still going to listen to Ain't Even Done With The Night.
Nice.
Outside the Tasty Freeze.
Well, Luke, before you do a number two on us.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you got puns too, I see.
I got another Matt Stats. It's the musical events of 1980. And there's some big ones, even though there's been some spoilers already, we know. So let's go back to the musical events of 1980. Let's go back to January 16th. So the day Lin-Manuel Miranda was born, Paul McCartney was getting arrested in Tokyo for having a half a pound of pot on him. And the whole Wings tour had to be canceled because Japan was so mad at him.
Damn.
February the 7th, Pink Floyd's The Wall tour kicks off, and it is supposed to be one of the greatest tours that has ever been. I never got to go to it. I think they still tour around and do it, you know, whatever iteration of the band, but it's supposed to be a very cool visual show. February 23rd, Ron Wood of the Rolling Stones is arrested for cocaine possession in the St. Martin Island. So a lot of
rock stars about right.
getting arrested for the drugs. February 29th, Leap Day, Buddy Holly's trademark glasses were found in a police storage locker in Iowa. Interesting. Wow. 21 years after the plane crash.
But he died in a plane crash.
I guess he died in a plane crash in Iowa.
In Iowa? Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
April 1st, Brian Johnson replaces Bon Scott as AC/DC vocalist. April the 5th, REM plays their first live show. Now, this is a big one, guys. June 25th, Sony introduces the Walkman to the United States.
Hey,
a big Sony. One. Yeah, July 31st, the Eagles play their final concert before hell froze over in the 90s and they get back together. And then
several times after that, but okay.
Of course, yeah. And September 13th, Elton John plays a free concert in Central Park to 400,000 people and plays the encore in a Donald Duck costume. So
okay, that's on brand.
Yeah. So anyway, Luke, you move that pillow and do your number two.
Okay. So my number two is Don't Stand So Close to Me by The Police.
Okay.
This was the first single off The Police's third album, Zenyatta Mandata. Oh, no.
Zenyatta Mandata.
This is the first time I've taken digital notes and... Okay, never mind. We're back. So The Police's ability to weave intricate instrumental fabrics as a backdrop for Sting's stirring vocals and evocative lyrics are pretty good at masking the fact that the lyrics themselves are pretty creepy.
Pretty creepy.
And this song's about as creepy as it gets.
Yeah.
The minor keys in the verses represent the minor in the song. Oh, okay, that wasn't in my notes. I just thought of it.
That was good because it's perfect. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
The minor keys in the verses juxtaposed against the happy, catchy chorus are a perfect representation of the joy and fear felt by the narrator of the song and his forbidden love. But even the happy chorus has the fearful message of, don't stand so close to me. In case you don't know, I think it's pretty well known, actually, that this song is about a teacher having a relationship with a student.
It sure is, and... I think we've all seen a little bit of that since we went to Franklin County High School. Oh my goodness, did I just say that? You can edit it out if you want.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Oh no, well I know who I'm talking about, but let's continue.
So, though Sting claims that this song is not autobiographical, the Wikipedia article astutely. Or cruelly notes that Sting worked as an English teacher before joining The Police.
Hmm. Interesting.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah, this song is creepy. And also, Every Breath You Take, I'll Be Watching
yeah,
You.
Yeah, that's...
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah. All of his creepy. Songs are kind of creepy.
Yeah. Sting, what's going on?
Singing about roses in the desert? Come on, man.
Come on. Fields of Gold? Come on, man.
But yeah, it's like a happy reggae tune, though. Like, yeah. What... You know, I need to listen to The Police more because I know Stuart Copeland is thought of as one of the best rock drummers of all time. And, of course, Sting is a phenomenal bass player. I pretty much just know the singles. Mm-hmm, and I like them all just fine, but...
Yeah, I probably just know the singles as well. So.
Invisible Sun. Invisible Sun is a great song. You need to check that out.
Invisible Sun.
Invisible Sun. Walking on the Moon, another great one.
So, oh, I do know that one.
Walking on the Moon, I had a resurgence in my life in 2007, I want to say, when there was a guy named...
When you broke your legs?
No. What? Is that what it happens in the song?
I hope my legs don't break.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I'm horrible with lyrics. But there was a guy on America's Got Talent. It was like the second or third season. I was watching the show back then, and his name was Cass Haley, I think. And he played Walking on the Moon, and I thought his version was better than Sting's version of it. So that song, like, back reminds me of that time in my life. But yeah, anyway, that's another episode. You got any other police facts? You want to talk about tantric sex or anything, Luke?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all.
All right, well, my number two is a very complex song wrapped in a pop song. Which is kind of the MO of this band, and it's just kind of a cool concept. I'll go into it a little bit, but the song is by Rush. It's The Spirit of Radio. And, you know, the concept of it is essentially when you wake up in the morning, you turn on the radio, and you hear the same DJs, you know, the same morning talk radio or whatever, And it's like you're almost listening to a friend, but it's someone you don't know and you'll never meet. But there's just something familiar and comforting about, you know, that radio voice. And I know in today's day and age, you know, that's
podcast.
It's podcast. Yeah. Like, you know, yeah. I listened to a few podcasts I've heard literally 500 plus episodes of, and I feel like I know the host, but they have no idea that I exist. But we have this relationship, but it's all one-sided. So it's kind of weird. But yeah, the Spirit of Radio, I don't think anybody is going to argue that Rush is one of the most talented musical band, like musicianship bands, whether or not you like them. The fact that three guys could make as much sound at one time. And of course, Neil Peart is one of the greatest drummers of all time, and nobody will argue anything
different. R.I.P.
Yeah, R.I.P. I had a couple of chances to see Rush.
Don't they refer to him as the professor?
Maybe, yeah. He was a strange guy. Like, he hated being famous. He wrote all the lyrics. He was kind of, I think he would have been a D&D nerd if he was about 15 years younger than he was. He was really into fantasy stuff. But, and I'm saying all this from memory, but his wife and his daughter, I think, were both killed in a car wreck. And he just got on a motorcycle and, like, drove, you know, rode it around the country for a year or more just to kind of clear his head. But he would never do, like, photos with fans or signings or, like, you know, Geddy Lee was real personable and he's always meeting fans. And Neil Peart was like, yeah, I'm not, I'll play the drums, I'll write the lyrics, but I'm not, I don't like being famous. So, but they're a cool band. They have way more albums than you think, and they all sound so different. And put on a heck of a live show from what I've heard in the videos that I've watched, and no controversy. Like, you never hear bad stories about the guys in Rush. Well, I think Alex Lifeson got arrested for public intoxication once or something, but
that jerk.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they just are.
I mean, that's way worse than having a half a pound of weed in Tokyo. So
yeah, it wouldn't surprise me to learn that none of them
or have ever child tasted porn alcohol on your computer.
Who did that?
Gary Glitter.
From what who? Band? The song from every rock, from every sporting event in the past 30 years.
The sporting event anthem, sure.
Yeah.
Which I'm not gonna lie, I'm like, I don't condone anything the man did, but that song is a banger. So
yeah,
whatever.
I guess thanks, separate the artist from the artist.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I got nothing else to add on Spirit of Radio. I know you've heard it a million times on the radio, but it's just a cool song. And
well, let me reiterate the whole, like, how cool it is, because in an age where we are streaming music, and I'm guilty of it too, because I love streaming music, like, and I love the ease of it, but, like, I do listen to a station in Louisville every weekend called WAKY, Wacky Radio, and they do the Wayback Weekend, where they only play, like, 50s and 60s oldies, and I religiously have, for 4 years now, tuned in to listen to it, and I love every single DJ that they have, and I love tuning in and hearing them, because it is, there's a comfort factor, and you do feel like you're, like, friends with them, and you feel like you know them, and it's like, it wouldn't be the weekend if I didn't hear Jim Garrison DJ me through the weekend, like, or Chris Randolph, you know what I mean? So,
isn't Jim Garrison the teacher at South Park?
Mr. Garrison, I don't remember his first name.
Okay, I don't know. Yeah, yeah, I don't know. Definitely cool. Yeah, it's a cool song and a cool concept. Yeah, I appreciate that so much. So
yeah,
it's still out there today. But yeah,
yeah. Well, Jason, you hit us with your number two.
My number two was released. The album was released in June of 1980. Album of the same name of the song. It hit number four on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100. And the single went to number one on the U.S. Billboard Soul charts. It is from the album Give Me the Night. The song is Give Me the Night by George Benson. I don't know if you guys know the song. I'm sure you probably heard it. There's music in the air and lots of love and everywhere. So give me the night.
Oh, yeah. I know that song.
That's heat. That's heat. Now, George Benson, I think probably what he's most popular for and that everybody had probably heard was his cover of On Broadway by, I believe, the Drifters. But George has got a lot of cool shit, man. And It was his first single. Give Me the Night was his first single to hit number one on those, like I said, the Soul chart and number four on the Hot 100. So that's a pretty high ranking. But basically, the song is about he and this girl. They're out on the town, and the excitement of the night comes alive, and the streets are alive, and everybody's dancing, and everybody's having fun, and people are out and enjoying just the spirit of the nighttime. So really upbeat, really jazzy funk song. Every time I hear it, I feel good. It's always just puts me in high spirits, and I'm never going to turn it off when I hear it. But George Benson just got a lot of cool shit. But Give Me the Night, and I can't remember who did the backup vocals. I believe it was a singer named Patty Austin, and I know you guys aren't going to know who the hell that is at all. But just great song, jazzy funk, George Benson. I do. If you're into that soul R&B funk stuff, I recommend checking George out. Don't really have a whole lot to say about it other than what I just said. So
nice. Yeah.
Give Me the Night.
I'll have to listen to that again. I definitely know the song.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good.
Well, Luke, before you do your honorable mentions, I do have one more short Matt stats, and it's just the top five biggest singles of 1980. This doesn't mean the songs came out in 1980. It's just the biggest selling singles of that year. Number five was Upside Down by Diana Ross. Number four was Funky Town by Lips Inc. or Incorporated, I guess.
Lips Incorporated, yeah.
Just Like Starting Over by John Lennon was number three. Woman in Love by Barbra Streisand was number two. And number one was Another Brick in the Wall Part 2 by Pink Floyd.
Okay. Nice.
Hit us with your honorables, Luke.
So my honorable mentions are, Matt, I had to get a Rush song in there too. I chose Free Will blindly.
Okay, that's
because I can sing the chorus. Yeah,
he chose Free Will.
He did.
I did. I will again.
Yeah.
Also, have to go with Sailing by Christopher Cross because come on, that's a pretty song.
Takes me away, oh man, I'm going. I know. I saw that on there. I was like, yeah, you know what? That's the jam.
It's. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I listened to it a few times. It's relaxing. I like it. I can sing along with it.
Oh sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And then my last one I put on here. Specifically for Kale, even though I know he doesn't listen, but I had to go with Devo Whip It. And I got in my car on the way home from work today, and it was on the radio, and I listened to it, and I was like, yeah, I kind of like this song. I remember it being really annoying, and I hated it when I was really little, but I think it just was overused. But they do some interesting things in that song. There's some weird timing and...
Definitely no. that post-punk, like, going into, like, a new sound kind of era. But, like, yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Who was the singer for Devo? Like, George Featherbottom something?
It's Mark Mothersby.
Yeah, Mark Mothersby. Yeah.
Mothersby. Yeah, and Mark did, actually, one thing I can tell you that he did was compose the theme song for the Rugrats television show.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was him.
Much like Danny Elfman, he has become more of a film composer than a pop star. But it's just interesting to think the guy from Devo did Rugrats theme. And among he's done – there's some director he works with. I'm going to have to look it up. Mother's Ball. Movies and TV shows. Oh, does he do – I think he does all of Wes Anderson's movies. He did Rushmore and
– Oh, okay. Oh, you know what? They're almost like the same style. The Devo music and Wes Anderson movies. So that's interesting.
Yeah. So
it's
I
a perfect
think,
match.
It looks like he did Thor Ragnarok as well. Yeah. Royal Tenenbaums, Rushmore. So yeah, he does all the Wes. I knew he was like Danny Elfman and Tim Burton and his Mark Mothersbaugh and Wes Anderson. So my honorable mentions Whip It by Devo.
Nice.
Call Me by Blondie. Ace of Spades by Motorhead, which honestly is probably only on there because I associate it with the Tony Hawk video games because it was on there.
Ace of Spades.
Yep. Yeah, loved it. 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton. Breaking the Law by Judas Priest. Mr. Crowley by Ozzy Osbourne. And Another One Bites the Dust by Queen.
So, Matt, you didn't do the Penn Jillette joke and just call Blondie Hitler's dog.
No, I didn't. I didn't even put two and two together on that, actually.
I think isn't that the joke? It's they're called Blondie because that was the name of Hitler's dog, and so Penn just refers to Blondie the band as Hitler's dog.
That sounds familiar, but I would not have come up with that off the top of my head.
Okay.
Yeah. Jason,
what nobody else would have got it but me anyway, yeah, so.
That's true.
My honorable mentions are Morning Train by Sheena Easton. Now, you guys know that. You've probably heard that. My baby takes the morning train. And I'm going to tell you a cute little tidbit about this song. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And then, it takes another home again. Now, I've always thought the song was cool, but, like, whatever. It's just one of those little poppy feel-good songs. But, like, I learned that with dating Micah that when she was a kid, she had a record of I guess it was, like, the early 80s version, late 70s, early 80s version of, like, Kids Bop, where it was this record of kids singing popular songs of the time. And she said, I had this record of kids singing Morning Train by Sheena Easton, and I used to wear it out. And so I always listened to it in my bedroom. And I was like, that's the cutest thing ever. I can totally see you in your bedroom, just little Micah bopping around to kids singing Morning Train. So that's a good song, though. Hey 19 by Steely Dan.
Yep, that's a good one.
He's So Shy by the Pointer Sisters. I'm Coming Out by Diana Ross because I absolutely love anything Diana Ross does, and I'm a big Supremes.
Yeah, that just missed my honorable cut.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Supremes guy all the way. Even her solo stuff is hot. So, Look What You've Done to Me by Boz Scaggs. Now, I'm going to say that was on the Urban Cowboy soundtrack. And so, while I'm at it, I might as well throw the entire Urban Cowboy soundtrack on there because that shit was fire.
hey, I'm talking. And the beat here. Goes,
hey, Sissy, I told you not to get on that bull. And the Beat Goes On by The Whispers. Just Like My Love Everlasting. Okay, and then finally, another creepy song that we can add, because it's about, listen, you guys have heard End of the Night by Benny Mardones, right?
I don't know.
If I could fly,
yes,
I'd lift you up. I mean, it's one of those songs that they would play in like a CVS pharmacy at like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Okay, but like it's about like trying to get with a 16-year-old, and the parents are like, no, you can't like date this guy who's like way older than you. But he says, look, they just don't understand what love is yet.
You know.
I'm not condoning it. Okay, I'm not condoning it. But the song is, I like the song.
Yeah, he's right. Like the 16-year-old doesn't understand what love is yet.
You're right, Benny Mardones. She doesn't. But yeah. I digress. I like the song. And that makes up the entirety of my honorable mentions.
There are a lot of songs from the 70s and early 80s about rambling and just like trying to like come into town and pick up the high school chick. Like, there's just a lot of those songs, and it's very creepy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird tradition. You can go back to Ringo Starr's debut album where he sings about she's 16 and she's mine.
Oh, yeah. She's 16, she's beautiful, and she's mine.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, he's singing about his daughter. And then he talks about kissing her on the lips later. And I was like, that's not
what he's singing about. Lots of creepy songs back in the 60s, actually.
Well, then you get Steely Dan, and they get, was it Little Hey 19? Or
Hey 19.
Yeah, I don't know if it's talking about a 19-year-old, but if they are, they're at least legal.
It is about a 19-year-old, and he's trying to find a common ground with her. But she can't relate to him on any level because he's so much older. Because he says, hey, 19, because, okay, so he's at a party with these girls, and they've got music on in the background or whatever, and he says to her, and here's a line, here's a verse from the song, hey, 19, that's Aretha Franklin, she don't remember the Queen of Soul, it's hard times befallen the soul survivors, she thinks I'm crazy, but I'm just growing old. It's like he's trying to get on some ground and try to hit this 19-year-old. But
hey, girl, you remember Cab Calloway? Come on.
I kind of feel like maybe that's him poking fun at all those songs about the rockers trying to get with the 14-year-olds. He's like, I'm trying to get with a 19-year-old, and she's too young.
Honestly, probably. Yeah. Probably, yeah. So, but, yeah.
We just
still. So, Matt, for next episode, I need
Did we lose Luke?
Did we totally just lose him, or?
Yeah. I think
we did.
Oh, are you back?
Oh, man.
Oh, Luke.
Did you miss that whole rant?
You just said,
I want you to listen back to this episode and do two things.
Okay. I want you to listen back to this episode and do two things. I want you to find out the percentage of songs that we talked about that are just creepy, and also the percentage of songs that Jason mentioned that have night in the title. I'm pretty sure for Jason it was 100%.
Yeah.
Give me the night.
There is a, ain't there's even a lot. Done yeah, with in, the night. Into the night. 19. Ain't even done with the night. And give me the night.
Or hey, night. Hey, 19. I'm gonna put
hey,
that.
19. Hey, 19. Yeah. Okay.
Enough.
And you don't even know what my number one's going to be, but
I don't. But I want to hear what Luke's number one is. The only one that he really truly cares about.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to disappoint you, Matt, because I'm going to steal your number one. And oh. I'm about to pull these muscles from this shell.
Okay, yeor that's my number
Squeeze.
One.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, Pulling Muscles from the Shell by Squeeze. This is the first track on Squeeze's third album, Argy Bargy, and it was released as a single in April of 1980. It was written by band members Chris Diffords and Glenn Tilbrook, incorporating Diffords' experience at a British holiday camp, which is sort of like a budget resort.
They were considered the Lennon and McCartney of new wave music, by the way. Those two guys were.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can see it, mainly because I did a mini dive into Squeeze, this album specifically, and I really like the first like six songs on this album.
Listen to the Greatest Hits album. There is not a song that's even like, there's no way I could skip any of them. Every one of them is amazing. Yeah. But yeah.
So this song starts off full speed, and in less than 5 seconds, Squeeze takes us from... Dang, my thing turned off. Squeeze takes us from the Camber Sands to Waikiki. Despite the song's rapid start, it gives you time to catch your breath before the next volley of lyrics, and like the ocean itself, the song is paced out in rhythmic waves, each at a slightly altered pace, keeping you on your toes and taking you somewhere new musically and rhythmically with nearly every new stanza of lyrics.
God, that's so... That's good, Luke.
I got a new keyboard for my tablet, and I've been playing with it.
Oh, well, the keyboard doesn't make you write poetry.
Yeah. and these lyrics perfectly capture the beach experience from reading in the sand, taking peeks at the beautiful people, topless ladies and he-men alike, surfing, wearing hats, to just posing around trying to look cool.
Jeez. You got really, it was really profound. Like, I'm impressed. Song, man. I need to step my note game up, apparently, because...
Do you know what pulling muscles from the shell means?
Well, according to my friend Shane, he said, I think he's talking about sex, but based on the what I was reading, I think it's just jacking off.
This guitar's really out of tune. Let's try that again. Okay, I can't do it. Anyway, that's a little solo lick from that song. Pulling muscles from the shell is a phrase that they made up to describe stimulating a female sexual organ with your fingers. Which, well, I read that, after I had been playing and learning the song on guitar for the past hour with Cora singing along, it became really awkward.
But the song also does a great job of doing imagery and expressing emotion with song. Like, I feel just like William Tell and Maid Marian on Tiptoed Feet. That's all about anticipation. I don't know. It's a really catchy song. It's great. I love it.
You know, Matt had brought this up to me back when we were still recording podcasts at your house, Luke. On the way back one night, he let me hear some Squeeze. And since then, I had heard more Squeeze. And I was like, literally no song of theirs sounds the same as the other one.
No, it really doesn't.
So for people listening, the Squeeze song you probably know is Tempted by the Fruit of Another.
Yeah. And that doesn't sound anything like this. And that doesn't sound anything like all their others. I mean, it really doesn't. There was a song, I can't remember the name of it. I can hum it, but I'm not going to. Mike and I were on the way home from the grocery store one night, and I was like, oh man, I like really dig this song. Can you like Shazam this or something and tell me who the hell this is? And she's like, it's Squeeze. And I was like, seriously?
No way.
Yeah. Like, it can't be Squeeze. It doesn't sound anything like anything Squeeze does. But it was Squeeze. And
For Cats? Was that it?
No, it wasn't that.
Up the Junction?
No.
They have a lot of good songs.
They do have a lot. They actually have a new EP out this year.
Really? Yeah. Well, here's what's cool about Squeeze. Paul Carrick, I watched him. There's a guy on YouTube called The Professor of Rock, and I've really gotten into watching this guy. He's so insightful about music from like the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. I mean, this guy, like, I want to hang out with the Professor Rock and like chill with him and have a beer and just talk music. But he did an episode on Paul Carrick, and Paul Carrick, his work is so expansive. Now, there was a band in the 70s called Ace, and they had a song called "How Long Has This Been Going On?" Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Anyway, he went on to do, he's done so much, but he did, he sang the lead vocals for Tempted.
Yeah, I see that on here.
By Squeeze.
Yeah.
And he's done numerous other things, but he also did the song "I Live by the Groove," which was featured in the movie The Wizard.
Okay.
During like a musical montage. And so I looked it up and I was like, no shit, that's Paul Carrick. I can't believe it. This guy's done everything. But yeah. But that Ace song is really cool too. But yeah, I mean, Paul Carrick's the shit. But he was also in Mike and the Mechanics with Mike Rutherford from Genesis. So yeah.
Nice.
But yeah, this guy's crazy. He's done everything. But
yeah, so the only two things I wanted to add about Squeeze and this song. My first exposure to it was our Aunt Missy used to come down and pick me and Luke up, and she'd drive us back to Lexington. We'd stay at her house for a night or two, and she'd always take us, you know, to Chi Chi's to get fried ice cream or
Laser Quest.
And, you know, she had a hot tub and she had a computer.
Coolest aunt ever.
Yeah. Right? So we like always had so much fun, but we'd always take Old Frankfort Pike and she'd go, I mean, the speed limit, but maybe a little over the hills. So you get that weightless feeling. You know,
the roller coaster hills.
Oh, yes. I know the Old Frankfort Pike.
And we would always listen to, she had a bunch of tapes in her car. She had Simon and Garfunkel's Greatest Hits. She had Squeeze Greatest Hits. She had like a Hootie and the Blowfish record. She had Spin Doctors, you know, that Pocket Full of Kryptonite, all of this stuff. Pocket
Full of Kryptonite.
But Squeeze was one we always listened to. And at the time, Cool for Cats was the song that I loved for whatever reason. But then this ended up being my favorite off of that Greatest Hits album. So it always reminds me of those times. But in college, or I wasn't in college, I'm sorry. This was like 13, 14 years ago. I wanted to play in a band, and I went to Craigslist. And I was like, I want to play in a band, play guitar. You know, I'm reliable. I have my own equipment, whatever.
That pretty much guarantees you don't belong in a band.
It is true. It is true. But I got
no band member has ever been reliable or owned their own equipment.
I got
must sound like Squeeze.
Yeah. Well, so what's funny is I got an email from this guy, and he's like, hey, I go to UK. I'm a student. And at this time, I'd been out of school for like 6 or 7 years, so way younger than me. But he's like, you know, we got a drummer, and I play lead guitar and do vocals, and we got a bass player. We're just looking for rhythm guitar. Would you be interested? I'm like, yeah. And actually, you know, I got a place in my basement. We can practice. So I went and I met this guy, and he was really into Van Halen, like, really into Van Halen. Like, he rebuilt Van Halen's famous guitar, had the same guitar strap. Like, I mean, like, could play every song, solo, everything. Just
that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, sound just like Van Halen. So, anyway, I was like, yeah, man, let's play. So we ended up, you know, we played together for not very long, 3 or 4 months. We never got out of the basement. And then eventually that guy, he ended up quitting the band. And if my memory serves me correctly, it's because we weren't playing enough Van Halen. I don't know if that's true. I think we played like 2 Van Halen songs. We played Mean Street and I can't remember something else. But we played like
Well, he wanted to play Jump.
Yeah. I think he wanted to do like Eruption and all kinds of stuff. But we ended up playing like Are You Gonna Go My Way by
Lenny Kravitz.
Lenny Kravitz. We all picked a song, and the first song that I picked was Pulling Muscles from the Shell. Of course, these guys or like, I've never heard of that band. And then we play the song, and they're like, okay. Like, the bass groove is cool. The guitar parts are cool. The drum is solid. And so we ended up playing it. I wish I had a recording of it. I mean, we only played it a few times. But it was just crazy that I got these kids who were a decade younger than me to play this song that came out before I was born. And everybody loved it. And by everybody, I mean the 4 of us. We never played out anywhere. But yeah, no, it's a great song. But listen to the Greatest Hits album. It's called Singles on 45 or 40. I'm sorry, 45s and under. Every song, like I'm looking at my Apple Music playlist, and every one of them has a heart by it because I loved it. So,
and don't expect them to sound like the last one.
No, or oh my god, none of them do.
They're coming next because it's not.
Before we move on, I kind of have a similar addendum, which is I listened to this album just kind of to see if there was anything better than Pulling Muscles on there, and there isn't really. But I listened through it once, and then I put it on again, and I found myself like singing along with a bunch of the songs the second time through, and I was like, how is this even possible? So I recommend checking out Another Nail in My Heart, Separate Beds, I Think I'm Go-Go, and the Farfisa beat. All those are pretty good jams.
Another Nail in My Heart is also on that Greatest Hits album.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. But yeah, no, Squeeze, like literally just pick an album and listen. They're nothing sounds the same. Up the Junction is like the most British guy you've ever heard in your life singing, and there's not a chorus. Like there's no chorus in the song. It just keeps going, and you're like, it works.
All right.
Yeah. So anyway, Jason, enough Squeeze talk, unless your number one is also pulling muscles.
It is not. So my number one, and there wasn't a lot of information about this song, but I can tell you that there was no release. Like it didn't give me any month release date, but of course it was 1980. Hit number 44 on the UK singles chart, and I believe that this song came out before the singer was popular, and you guys know who it is. From the album Clues, it is Johnny and Mary by Robert Palmer.
Okay.
I know Robert Palmer.
You know Robert Palmer. He's smooth, he's sexy, he's silky with it.
He's
addicted to love. And let me tell you something. So I don't know how, as well-versed in 80s music as I am, that I had never heard this song until about a year ago. And we were at work, and we listened to WUKY, which is an NPR station here in Lexington. And the song came on, and I was just like, what in the hell is this, and how have I never heard it? So I was like Googling the lyrics like as it was going, and I was like, oh. Robert Palmer, no shit. So really taken by the sound because it sounded like it was something from the early 80s. So from some British new wave post-punk artist. And I was like, whatever this is, I got to find it. So per use with Robert Palmer, it was really the vocal delivery was just so laid back and cool. And, you know, he's got that swagger about him. It was almost seemed like effortless, right? But the song has a really awesome beat and a melody to it. It's really upbeat, and it has this great little synth lick and this guitar rhythm that very low toned and, like I said, almost effortless vocal. But like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, it just sounds cool, right, when you hear it. I guess the song is about like a girl and a guy trying to make a relationship work, and they have these like two opposing opinions about each other. And he relays that through each verse, like his side, her side, his side, her side, his side, her side. And maybe he won't get his shit together, and like Johnny won't get his shit together, but Mary knows what she wants out of life, and she's nagging about Johnny, and Johnny's complaining about her nagging about him. But I was so into it, and I couldn't believe that I had never heard it before. And I'm telling you, last summer, when I heard it, it became my favorite song of that summer. I was like, right now, this is my favorite song of all time. Like, I just want to keep listening. And I listened to it on repeat so much. And I'm glad that this song popped up on our year because I just loved it. And then I started really diving into it and found out that Tina Turner did a really great cover of it too. Same melody and everything, but it has a more positive tone to it. Tina's does. It's got a more upbeat, lively feel to it, where Robert Palmer's still has that melancholy, like sort of, I don't know. It's not as happy sounding as Tina's is, but like, I'm always going back to that Robert Palmer version. Like, I loved it so much that I considered booking studio time to maybe go in and try to record a version of it if I could pull it off, because I loved it so much.
Wow. So, okay.
That cool nice. Song, like such a cool song. Like every time I hear it, I'm like, nope, I'm not skipping. I'm not turning it. This is staying on. Johnny and Mary by Robert Palmer. Just cool. Robert Palmer was the like epitome of cool.
I just think of Weird Al, the Addicted to Spuds song he did.
You always go back to Weird Al.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing with you. You always go back to Weird Al. But yeah, yeah, man, like Johnny and Mary. And, you know, this was before, like I said, he got huge, you know, with the Addicted to Love and the Doctor and, you know, whatever else. Of course, Power Station. He did Power Station with Andy Taylor and John Taylor and Duran Duran.
Wait, hold on. Robert Palmer Is that Dr. Doctor, give me the news, I got a bad case of loving?
Bad case of loving you, yeah.
Why did I think that was Jackson Brown?
Nope. Yep.
Does he sing Doctor My Eyes?
He does Doctor My Eyes. That's what he, yes, that's where the confusion came from. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, just the epitome of laid back cool. Like, he doesn't, I feel like he doesn't put a lot of effort into singing the song, but it just adds to the tone of it. Like, I can't explain it. It's one that I can't explain. I just say you have to listen to it. So there you go.
Nice. Yeah, I don't know that one at all by name, so I have to.
I like it's still one of my favorite songs, but I was so obsessed with it last summer that it's like all I listen to on repeat. No kidding. If I was driving home from work on a 15-minute car ride, I listened to it until I got home from the time I left work. It was crazy. Yeah.
Well, so we had 13 different songs between us. Me and Luke had two that we shared, and I've created playlists on both Apple Music and Spotify. So once we release the episode, I will put the playlist for both of those services in the notes, and I am going to personally listen through it tomorrow while I work because cool. Jason,
you were able to find everything, right?
Yeah, surprisingly, ever since Prince died, his music is out there. But for when he was,
I've noticed that. Like you used to not be able to, unless you had the album, they weren't going to be on YouTube or streaming or anything. But now,
yeah, I think at this point the biggest holdout is still Garth Brooks. Like if you look on Spotify and Apple Music, you'll find people covering his songs, trying to sound like him. But he has his own music service called like Ghost Tunes or something.
Garth Radio, man. Garth
Chris. What was that guy's name?
What was his name?
Chris Burns. What was his name?
No, with the goat, with the Fu or the soul patch. Not Chris Gaines. Chris Gaines.
Oh, yeah. Chris Gaines. Chris Gaines. When he went full goth rocker, or whatever he was trying to do. Yeah.
You can still find Chris Gaines stuff out there, but no Garth Brooks.
Well, because he wasn't Garth. No, it was two different entities, man. Gaines, two different guys.
Yeah.
Chris Gaines.
So. I went ahead and made an executive decision. So our next episode is episode 69, which can you believe?
69, dude!
This one was sexually explicit.
I know.
This one should have been
69 because of Jason's prints and Luke's sting and squeeze. Yeah. But we've talked about this for a couple of years, and the timing never lined up, but we're going to make it happen. And our episode 69.
Oh, I know what he's going to say. Movies of 84. Please tell me it's movies of 84.
What does that have to do with February?
What?
No, that's coming. No, snow days. We're going to talk about the lost art of waking up to find out there was no school. And just what antics did you get into when there was an unexpected day where you didn't have to go to class? Like, and I know, Jason, for you, it's different than me and Luke because you grew up in the country. And we did, too, for a while. But then we moved to the city.
Well, I feel like we did a lot of the same things, honestly. So
okay. Well, good. Yeah. But I thought this would be because there's not as many, like, retro lost art of topics for us to hit because we've already talked about,
we've covered them all.
We've covered so many.
We've been so thorough.
But we have not talked about, we've talked about summer vacation. We've not talked about that unexpected snow day. So that'll be our next episode. I don't expect it'll probably be as long as this episode is. But, who knows? But anyway, snow days. So start getting your notes together. Pull out your mittens. Ski masks.
Because here in Kentucky, come February, we're going to get shit on at some point with a big old snow dump.
It'll either be that or it'll be 75. We never know. 75 and sunny.
You never can tell.
I assume both. Thing.
Or it might be 75 and dump on us with snow.
Yeah, it could be that too. Yeah, so you know what you could say, Jason? You could say, tune in next time because we're going to have something cold to talk about.
No. I got it. I've already got it. Let me just wrap this up. Will you tell me when you're ready?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't you guys tune in next time when we have something no school to talk about? I mean, that works, right?
Like, we have something snow to talk about.
No, we'll have something no school to talk about.
Snow school.
And we'll have something ice to talk about.
Oh my God, we're getting worse. We're never going to talk.
School was great because it rhymes with the cool, and we're not in school because of the snow day.
We're never going to top something Zool to talk about, even though we missed it. we missed it. But I thought of it after.
Yeah, we had. Yeah, we came in after the fact with that one, but it was still like the best.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. Tune in next time with something no school to talk about.
Bye.
Bye. Hey, Jason, you missed Luke's number four. It was just the two of us, so it's back to me already.
Oh.
Which was good, because when I said it, it was just the two of us.
Oh,
it is true. Isn't that so appropriate? Okay, cool.
Oh, wait, hold on. Can we go back? Can you say do a number two again?
Yeah, do a number two.
No, you got to say Luke before you do a number two.
Luke, before you do a number two.
Oh, I thought I was safe up against this pillow.
No.
I got some Golden Girls line.
I'm still thinking about that line. What, this old thing? Don't worry, Blanche, the dress covers the most
dress
of
covers
it.
The dress covers most of it.
Love it.
That song is, that guitar is really out of tune.
It's really out of tune.